Accession number 11941, rule 3.
Mr. T. Nimmons, Reel 3. What was your first impressions of Egypt, Mr. Nimmons?
Well, the first impression was the wogs dashing around the sewers, and the sand, and of course we progressed up to Kassassin, well, followed the canal up, and nearly speaking, there wasn't a lot to it. It was dusty and...
What was the camp like itself?
The camp was tented, four-walled tents, and there was a central pole in. Now, around the central pole, your rifles were stacked, and unfortunately, the wogs were wise, and there were quite a few rifles stolen. So that even the window-type openings in the walls, their hands would come through and grab whatever they could.
Was it an offence to lose your rifle in that way?
It was, yes. And it was a charge, yes.
Were there any amenities in the camp which you know, were helpful in leisure time?
No, I never got involved with it at all. There was just nothing there as far as I was concerned.
What was the food situation like in the brief time you were there? Because you weren't there long.
No, it was just a... Well, I couldn't really say what the meals were now. It's long ago.
Where did you move to after Kassassin?
Cyprus.
And how did that come about?
Well, we were taken over there by boat. And we went to near Nicosia, about 10 miles west of Nicosia. The battalion headquarters was at Lakatamia.
Do you remember anything of the journey itself?
Not really, no. No, you just bundled onto a cruiser or something like that.
So you went to this battalion headquarters camp for near Nicosia. What was the tenting? Was it tents?
The headquarters company was in tents, but the audio room took over an old school that was there.
What was Cyprus like? What was your first impression of Cyprus?
It was a nice sailing, I think. Cyprus, there was some up and we used to go nod swimming up in the Troodos mountains there.
What was your particular job there?
Well, I was sergeant. I wasn't sergeant. I was corporal clerk, and it was the same routine. Well, we had a couple of court martials there. Well, it was our job to type all the relevant documents for the court-martial.
Do you recall the details of the court-martials?
No, I don't. I think it was only one case was... there was one of the villages out of bounds, and you had to go straight through it. You couldn't get off at one end and drop off in the village. And there's a particular corporal who had... dropped off, gone into the village, and the police had collared him, and he was court-martialed and reduced. He wasn't a corporal, he was a sergeant, he was reduced to corporal.
Do you remember his name?
No, I don't think so. Yes.
What's the procedure from the administrative point of view of a court-martial? What were you doing?
Well, we had to get all the evidence was typed, you see. And, of course, at that time we laid the court-martial room out for the president and the defence and prosecuting officers.
And were you typing information which was for the prosecution or both?
Oh, no. It was it was the proceedings of the, was taken down in handwriting, you know, we taped it from there. Yes.
Was there any other major task which company officers or battalion officers had to carry out?
Well, we did eventually go on with ciphers. We got ciphered messages in. Well, in fact, I was the one responsible for deciphering and sending messages out in cipher.
And how was that done?
Oh, it's a code book, yes.
And how did it operate? You have this book with these codes in. How yes. Does that operate?
Oh, well. I couldn't really tell you now.
Did they change daily, the codes, or some system?
Oh, it was about once a week, I think, they would change, yes.
And they went out by radio?
No. It went by Donar. Yes.
Did you get much opportunity to see Cyprus, other than with the army itself, of course, other than in a military sense?
Not a lot. I got down to Nicosia maybe once in a week or something like that, and then, of course, you ended up in the Staminis.
What were the people like? Did they welcome you?
They were fairly decent, I think. I don't know how we came to, we were invited to a wedding in the village. And it was quite unusual, you know. How they walked around and they clapped one another on the back as they were going around. But they were, seemed to be very friendly people.
What job was the battalion doing in Cyprus?
It was the island defences, yes. More or less digging trenches. And
What else happened while you were there?
Not a lot, really, no. Because from that point, well, our time was numbered, so we had to move out.
Have you got any dates, the time that you were there?
Cyprus. We were there from about the July until the October.
This is 1941.
41, yes.
Where did you go to after that?
I went to Palestine.
You recall that?
I called it Haifa, and moved up into a hooded camp. And like, we just more or less amalgamated, and eventually we moved from Palestine to Iraq.
Do you recall how long you were in Palestine before you moved?
It was only about 3 months at most, yes.
Iraq's quite... Iraq is quite a long way off. How did you get there?
Well, we travelled by truck through Transjordan and up to Kirkuk. And from Kirkuk, we had a 95 march. Well, we actually passed Baghdad on the way to Kirkuk. And it was a 95-mile march from there up to... covered 5 days. And it was a place called Two Rivers, where the battalion was stationed there. It would be possibly about 7 miles from Mosul.
Did you march that distance?
Well, to take our turn. Because you had to get... You got up in the morning and struck your tents. And you had to pitch them at night. Well, the order room had to be somebody there to get the tents pitched, you see, ready for the work to get on. So the ones that weren't marching were travelling on the truck.
Do you recall much about the journey? It must have been quite a momentous one.
It was a bit rough. It was on full pack, and I think it was a matter of showing strength. Because I think at that time they were expecting the Russians coming through the Caucasus.
What memories have you of your stay in Iraq?
Well, not a lot, really. We had a local lad, Reg Hetherington. He died. There was some blood disease he'd got, and the only time I was ever in Mosul was at his burial. So we had a firing party then, and we went up. But It wasn't a very nice sort of country at all. Mosul was a proper wog town.
You'd been there over the winter. What was that like?
It was pretty rough. We were only in tents, and you had to dig down in the ground for your bed space. You put your rifle in there first. Your blankets went on top of that, and you got on top of the lot in between the blankets. And it was really cold. In fact, after a few days, they issued charcoal. Well, you dashed out of your tent and swung your charcoal bucket, and then you dashed in, you got a little bit of heat. But it wasn't very nice. The river froze up there, actually. So we were making tea with the snow.
And what about food? How was that getting to you, and what kind of quality?
Oh, yes, it was normal type food, you know. You got your bacon and breakfast, and your burgoo with it.
Burgoo?
Well, it was biscuits broken up and made into a porridge sort of thing. Yeah.
And the worst of the winter, how did you manage to keep your morale up, for example? It must have been extremely boring.
Oh, it was, but of course, again, you see, we were working most of the day, and then retreat was held every night. I mean, I didn't know why, but it was a noisy show. And we used a lot of oil and water to make a fire in the ordinary room with tins. And it was quite a lot of heat came from it.
And your tasks in the orderly room, what exactly were they?
Well, it was just normal office duties, strength states and orders going out to the companies.
Do you recall any of the army forms that you were prevalent that you had to fill in and work with?
No, but the only regular one you get was a 252. That's the old charge sheet.
Sickness, when the men reported sick, did you have something to do with that in the sense of keeping records?
No, that was the medical officer. He did that.
Who was commanding officer at this time?
That was Colonel Joss Percy. Mm.
And you'd had him for some time?
Oh, yes. He'd taken over after he came back from Dunkirk. Yes, and he had a stiff leg. I often think of him, he's kind of, I've got one now too.
Were there any other changes in the office that since you had arrived in Iraq?
No. My adjutant was Captain Scott Beatty.
And what was he like?
He was a Gosforth chap, really. He was a quite efficient sort of chap. He eventually got a posting to Turkey. He must have been over the British legation there.
Did you have any problems with morale and discipline during the time you were there?
No, the only thing we did have was we had one chap had got out and got a hold of some Arab rum, and he died during the night. He choked to death.
Yeah. And where did you go for any form of leisure?
Well, it just wasn't any. Not kind. Some of them would get into Mosul for a time, but it just wasn't worth going there.
Were you getting any mail from home?
Oh yes. It wasn't too bad for that.
And that include parcels?
Oh yes.
How long were you there?
We left Iraq in the February 42, we went up to the desert.
Do you recall anything of that particular journey back?
Well, again, it was all trucks all the way. And you just stopped at night, and the cooks went ahead and had a meal prepared for you.
And the whole battalion moved in trucks?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
How long did the journey take to get back to the canal?
Well, actually, we went straight through, you know, straight off up into the desert. And we were relieved. I don't know who it was we relieved. But,
Had you any notion as to where you're going when you move back?
No.
Even in the office?
No. No.
So those orders were kept secret?
Very secret, yes. Mm.
Your journey up the desert after leaving the canal and moving up the desert, did you come across any signs of fighting?
Well, we passed Tobruk. And that was regular. You couldn't really see a lot. It was, and we got up to the Gazala box from there.
What were your first impressions of the box when you moved in there?
Well, it was something that you hadn't had before. There was you dug your own spaces, so you would blow ground and camouflage with a ground sheet and sand on top of that. You see. And but again, you were in the order room, you were just working. And of course, at that point, after about 3 weeks, I was transferred back to B echelon with the secret boxes and whatnot. And
the time that you were actually in the orderly room, was it separate from your sleeping quarters, the orderly room?
Oh, no, you'd be sleeping in.
And how was that constructed? It must have been a reasonable size.
Oh, yes, that was dug, you know, we didn't do the digging for that.
How did you find life in the box in the very early days before you moved to B echelon?
Well, it was... used to get an odd plane across, doing a bit of strapping. And that's all there was. I mean, we didn't do any night maneuvers out into no man's land at all.
But that
the companies, the rifle companies did.
Yeah. Rifle companies were. Now, did that in any way change your particular work or add to your work?
No. No, it was just if there was any killed or anything like that, we'd have to do reports out. Part one, part two orders.
And where did they go?
They went back to Cairo, eventually. And then, of course, from Cairo, they'll be sent off on to England.
Who wrote the letters of commiseration, if there was anyone?
The adjutant, yes.
And did he write that in his own hand? Or
in his own hand, yes. We never saw any of those, no.
What was the desert like?
It was free. There was a sense of freedom about it, but when night time came, it got black, and seen fellas go out to use the desert roads, and an awful job finding a snitch fish again. It was terrible in that respect, but there was a sense of freedom about it.
How was the hygiene catered for? Toilets and latrines and so on?
Well, the desert rose, and they were dug just in the way for anywhere, and the others were just a rope across, you know. But
what was the worst part of desert life?
Water.
How bad was that?
When you think that you had about a pint of water a day, and someone out of that for cooking, and you managed to get a bath with a little drop you'd saved in your tin mug and your shaving brush, and but you got by.
Had any problem with flies?
Oh, terrible! Yes, I could never. Well, you're always knocking them off, but. It was, when you look at some of these kiddies now that are showing on the telly, they just don't bother. They just let them walk around. Oh, I couldn't do that.
And the heat itself, did it have any bad effects upon people?
Not really. I mean, when we first went out, we had the old-fashioned topi, and then that gave way to the pith helmet. And later on in the desert, we eventually just got that we didn't need it. You say, oh, I'll have your Glengarry on, of course, or your Tinard.
Had any men problems with heat burning, you know, burning?
Oh, yes, well, there's no...
Dehydration?
No, not in that respect. But anybody found without their shirts on, anything like that, there was an offence. Yeah.
What was the food situation inside the box?
Well, it was hard tack biscuits. If you've got, you might occasionally get a supply of bread, but very, very occasionally, and that was covered with sand. But we had biscuits, and they used the biscuits also for the porridge in the morning. And, normal dehydrated cabbage and potato.
Were the men standing to and standing down? Because they were in a...
Oh, yes.
Did this in any way involve yourself?
Oh, yes, everybody stood to.
And where would you do that?
Well, there were certain points that you had to go to, yes. Now,
what time in the morning would that be?
It'd be about 6 o'clock. And
how long would it last?
All you got, probably half an hour. All you got was a horn blowing. And that signaled you stand to. And of course, you made a way to a point.
When you say horns, you mean bugles?
No, the transport horns, you know, they were set back from the...
And you made your way to
a point and assembled there.
And were you inspected in that point before you started?
Oh, no, no. No, yeah, I mean, it didn't matter whether you'd been dressed or anything, you know, washed even. That was your job to get there at that point.
And after that, after you stood to, what was the next incident in your day?
Well, it'd be breakfast after that.
And that the breakfast you've just described?
That's right, yes.
And after that, what came after that?
Oh, you're back into work, in an office duty, see? But the men themselves are beyond standing by guns in the line, the bread gunners.
You said aircraft came over occasionally to raid. What happened then? What did you do then? If an aircraft did appear?
Well, we had Bren guns set up at certain points, you see, and you actually got used to them coming over. You knew it was about 10, they were popping over, you see. It was just something they had to do. They had to get to that Bren to get a go at this. And I've seen lads cry. You know, they'd been so pent up that they had them. They thought they had them, you see, and just flew back over, you see, and settled one or two here.
And did you remain in the office, or had you go to some slip trench or some cover?
Not really. We were mostly in the office. That didn't affect very much.
Was the camouflage very good?
It was. It was camouflage netting. Yes.
And of course... The whole box area would be camouflage.
Yeah. And again, your sand was... all your top of your slit trenches was covered with sand, you see.
Were you able to move much during the day, during the daylight?
Oh, yes. You can move around, yes. But... It was an easy life. Yeah, most of the work was done at night. Patrols went out at night.
When did you move to B Echelon?
Well, it was myself that moved to B Echelon. We established a B Echelon. And that would probably be about 5 mile back of the line. And the quartermaster and officers' baggage and stuff like that was all down at this B Echelon.
So what exactly did B Echelon comprise of? You mentioned quartermaster.
Quartermaster and some transport, water wagons, and I had my own office, and there was a Captain Jackson. He was the officer in charge of B Echelon. The Lieutenant Quartermaster, Ted Love, he was looked after the stores.
What were these men like?
Well, Quartermaster was a regular soldier. And he's quite good. He's a good, strict man. He gave you... I'd always been used to handling money at that point. And I used to go down to the Nuffy and get the Nuffy supplies. And to do that, he used to go south until he hit the line of telegraph posts. Then he turned right until he came to El Adam, and that was the Nuffy Centre. And having got back, I handed them out and took the money in. And of course, I had a runner. I said, oh, take that down to the left-hand quartermaster. And he sent them back with it. He says, tell, well, I was Lance Sergeant now, tell Sergeant Nunes I want to see him. So I went down, he said, never give a private soldier money. He says, it's not fair on him. And of course, I'd always been used to handling it myself and didn't think anything of it then. But he was right. Yeah? Yes. And of course, it was stuff came down from the line in a charity do type.
The Nuffy at El Adam, can you describe it? What exactly was it like?
Oh, it was just sheds and tents. It was just stuck out in the desert, just the same way.
And what kind of things were you getting there?
Well, you had chocolate and razor blades and cigarettes. And they got some beer in. It's peculiar that, though, because a lot of lads didn't drink beer. They hadn't got used to drinking, I don't think. And of course, the others just bought it from them. But you had to be careful. You couldn't get drunk up there.
What money were you using? Was it Egyptian or English?
It was Egyptian, yes. Yes.
And these supplies that you were getting from the Nuffy, were these just within your own small group, or were you actually taking orders from companies of it?
No, the companies had their own PRI man, you see. They would go down on their own.
So your job was to do the B.S. one?
That's right, yes.
Ordering, if you would say.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
You said BS1 was 5 miles back. Was that outside of the box?
It came... Ah, yes, it came... You had to come through the minefield, in the gap in the minefield, to get back to BS1.
Mm. And whereabouts were you situated in relation to the actual 151 Brigade box, or your own area?
Oh, we were actually... it was more or less straight down from our own...
You weren't up near the coast?
...battalion. No, no. No, you were right in the desert, still.
What was your work there, Mr.
Nimmons? I was clerical work, just the same. But the returns came to me from the line, and I dealt with them, and then they went on from me down to Echelon.
And you said you were a Lance Sergeant then?
Yes.
You'd been promoted?
Mm, that's right.
Can you recall about what date you were promoted?
No, I mean, the 15th of November.
Again, 1941.
Yes. Of course, that had been in Iraq, just before we left Iraq.
Now, you'd arrive at the box in the February of 42.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd be in B Echelon, I think you said about 3 weeks or 4 weeks after you'd arrived.
No, that's right.
How long were you with B Echelon?
Not very long. It'd be about 5 or 6 weeks, and there was something adrift, because I eventually had to go and take over a guard on one of the minefields, which entailed about six men and myself, and had to lift the mines in the morning, put them down again, close the gaps at night. And your men do it three on the, crossfire, in case it was needed.
So you lifted them out. How did you lift the mines?
Oh, yeah, they were dug into the ground. And they were just placed. And you You just picked them up.
They weren't covered?
No. Picked them up and set them to the side of the truck.
And how wide was the gap?
Oh, well, it was wide enough for a truck to get through. Yeah.
But and at night you put them back?
Put them back again, yeah.
You mentioned this triangular fire. How was that arranged?
Well, it was a... Well, you'd have one man coming across that particular side there. You have one in the middle and the other one going across that way.
So the fire in effect...
Crossed over, yes.
One spot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And six of you were...
That's right. I had three on and three off, you know.
How long did you do that job?
Wasn't very long. There was something, you could tell there was something moving somewhere in the line. And the next thing we knew was that we had to get out.
Do you recall what time that was? What date?
Oh, this was coming up to the time. It was about 26th of June. And we'd got word through that we were going to have to break out because Jerry was coming around the side and in danger of cutting us off. He'd already cut the 6th Battalion off.